Mr. Solicitor General, you may resume where you left off yesterday.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. The concessions that petitioner makes in his brief and those that my brother, Mr. Bruno, made in his argument yesterday affirm the accuracy of the government's statement of the question in its brief. We stated the question to be whether the Emergency School Aid Act authorizes the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare to withhold the special funds provided under that statutory program from a school district whose faculty assignment policies have a disparate racial impact not justified by educational needs without a showing that they violate the Equal Protection Clause. We argued yesterday that Section 1605D1B, which is the statutory provision providing for disqualification of certain school districts, establishes a results test for the disproportionate demotion or dismissal of faculty or other personnel. And this, of course, requires us to focus on the second clause, which provides or otherwise engaged in discrimination based upon race, color, or national origin in the hiring, promotion, or assignment of employees. And, of course, the construction that the Court accords to this clause will determine the validity of the regulation, which petitioner admits has not been adhered to by its school board. We suggest that there's no reason why racially disparate hiring, promotion, or assignment should produce a result different from disproportionate demotion or dismissal to justify the requirement of a motive for one and not for the other. And we've endeavored to...
Well, maybe you and we would agree with you, but maybe Congress didn't. That's the question, isn't it?
That is indeed the question, Mr. Justice Stewart. And I've tried to surmise why the Congress used different language in these two instances. And I think the best argument that occurs to me at this time is as follows. The attention of the Congress was focused upon what had been de jure separate school systems in the South, which, of course, were dual school systems and were duplicative in so many respects. There was the white school and, as they were known in those days, the colored school. And there were principals for each, administrative personnel for each, as well as instructional personnel or faculty. And the Congress was concerned that in the dismantlement of dual systems, that black employees or minority employees would be disproportionately fired. For example, if the system had 40 white principals and 10 black principals for a total of 50, and it ended up that it just needed 40 once the separate system was to be dismantled, the Congress focused its attention to the situation which might result in the firing of all 10 black principals. And therefore, the language disproportionate dismissal or demotion seems appropriate. However, one has difficulty with a concept such as disproportionate hiring. What does disproportionate hiring mean? I have difficulty with that. Does this mean that if five candidates present themselves, four of one race and one of another, that to hire any other than a four-to-one ratio would be disproportionate? This doesn't make sense to me in terms of whether the candidates had the skills that were needed at the time. One might be a Latin teacher, an English teacher, a French teacher, and so forth. I have Even more trouble with the notion of disproportionate assignment if it means in proportion to what? In proportion to the number of people in the school system? And I don't think the Congress wanted to establish a quota in the establishment of schools. And the hiring and promotion and assignment, of course, looks towards establishment and not disestablishment. And for that reason, it would seem, to use the phrase otherwise discriminate allows more latitude in the establishment and ongoing conduct of a school district. And that satisfies me as a sufficient reason for using different language, but still having a results test. And as the regulation provides, the results test is met if the discrimination in hiring or assignment results in the school being identified as a school for children or for students of a particular race, color, or national origin.
General McCree, would you say that the word discriminate means treat differently?
I think that's what it means. I think that's exactly what it means. But that doesn't mean discriminate in the sense of an impermissible constitutionally impermissible discernment of who the persons were. Because obviously they have to discern who they are to avoid the disproportionate dismissal or demotion. So discrimination occurs in that process too. And yet it's conceded that that's a results test.
Wouldn't you say, Mr. Solicitor General, that the word discriminate or engage in discrimination, to use the statutory language, standing alone, implies some kind of an intention? I mean,
if you had
discriminatory effect, then that would have its own meaning. But engage in discrimination, doesn't that imply intent?
Well, I think it certainly implies awareness of discernment. Discrimination means to be aware of a difference, and it doesn't necessarily mean to implement it. I can discriminate between colors or among colors. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to do anything about it. I just have the capacity to know it's an awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're talking about a results test, and it would just appear that the Congress used that phrase, otherwise discriminate, to mean otherwise produce a result that would show that the statutory purpose, which of course was to eliminate the distinction between de jure and de facto, and to protect the children from the harm that would result from racial isolation, as was stated in the Congressional Statement of Purpose.
Mr. Solicitor General, may I ask you a sort of basic question about the statute so I can have a little better understanding of the whole scheme? Literally, it seems to provide that if there is a violation of any one of these subparagraphs, the educational agency shall never be eligible for assistance. It says no educational agency shall be eligible for assistance under this chapter if it has, after this set date, engaged in any of these practices. Is that the way the agency reads it, or is a school board permitted to correct violations and then become eligible, even though it was, in fact, in violation for a period after June 23, 1970?
It's quite the latter, Mr. Justice Stevens. Yeah. The school board may apply for a waiver of the condition of eligibility, and if the waiver is granted, the school aid monies are paid forthwith.
And the basis for a waiver is that the situation...
To correct the situation that would render them ineligible, but for the waiver system.
So that in the case before us, we've had a stay, in effect, as I understand it, for some years on the disbursement of the funds that they're trying to get.
The $3.5 million
whatever.
All intact.
But if in the years that have gone by since this case started, they had corrected the situation in the teacher assignments, then presumably they could become eligible in the future.
They
right?
could.
So they may still get their money even if they lose this lawsuit.
This is exactly my understanding of it. As a matter of fact, there is a companion case called Caulfield, which involves an ongoing dialogue between the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare and the school board. There's also another case that involves a request for a waiver and the rejection of the request for the waiver because of the department's determination that the ineligibility demonstrated in this case had not been successfully removed. And in all of these cases, the funds that had been preliminarily set aside are still there.
Now, let me turn, if you will, to the consequences of the department's determination that there's a violation. The consequence is what?
The consequence is that the school board then does not receive the funds that it's requested, but the school board may request a waiver of eligibility.
That's under regulations, I take it.
Well, that the regulation...
Well, in any event, it's available. The waiver procedure is available.
The waiver procedure is available,
well, then
but it's not present in
the
this.
Next step in my inquiry. If the consequences to take this money away from the Board of Education, consequences that what is regarded as a bad situation may become worse. Is that not so?
Well, it could be if it were the policy of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare to punish, but it isn't at all. These are funds in addition to funds that the school board would otherwise have, and the funds are made available to assist the school in achieving the congressional goals here, which are to eliminate what in the North was called de facto segregation because of the congressional finding that it was harmful to the children who were in that kind of situation. We mentioned in our brief a quotation from Senator Stennis, which and with leave of court, I would like to read this. This is on page 18 of our brief. And Senator Eastland, who says, quote, "I have never been able to understand how a 10-year-old colored student in a public school in Harlem, Watts, or South Chicago is expected to look around and see nothing but black faces in his classroom and say to himself, this kind of racial separation does not hurt me, because the state of Illinois does not have a law requiring me to attend all black schools. I should not feel hurt by this racial separation because it is the result of housing patterns that just accidentally happened." So this legislation was intended to relieve that situation as well as one where a state statute mandated it. And we submit that a school board that wishes to participate in doing that, even if the courts could not compel him to do it,
but
or the Congress could not.
The adverse consequences, to some extent, falls on the very people Congress intended to benefit. Is that not so?
Yes, I would think so. But the economic reality is that all school boards are desperately in need of funds, and these funds are available, and they can be obtained, and the waiver process is there. As part of the history of this,
you can get money under this program for more than one thing, I take it.
Oh, yes, for several different kinds of
and
programs.
You might be using some of it for discriminatorily and another part of it not. If you have several programs going, and some of it might not.
It might happen that way, except the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare monitors it and endeavors to.
But if they find that certain money is being used in a discriminatory manner and they cut it off, it doesn't mean that they cut off any other money that's being used.
Oh, no. The school raises its own money from its own taxes.
No, but I mean, what if federal money is being used for two or three different things?
Well, I would think Title VI might come into play at that point, which is a general prohibition.
Well, you mean the school board then is completely ineligible for any funds, is that it?
Well, if the school board is guilty of constitutionally prohibited discrimination.
Well, yes, but it is you don't suggest that it has to be to be in violation of this
statute. Not to be in violation of ESSA. That's
well, I'm
exactly
saying,
right.
What if it is in violation of this statute in a certain way, in using certain funds, but it's getting other funds for other programs under this same statute?
Well, then one would have to look to the authorizing provisions and provisions for ineligibility, if any, in that other statutory scheme.
Well, under this statute, would all funds under this statute have to cease if a certain use of some of the funds is in a discriminatory manner?
Funds under this statute would, as I understand it, but not necessarily under other statutory schemes. I don't read it to say that.
Mr. Solicitor General, am I not correct in understanding that all of the funds under this statute are intended to correct the effects of discrimination in the past and so forth, aren't they? That's what this whole program is, isn't it?
Well, if I understand the court to use discrimination to mean de facto as well
right,
as de
right.
jure.
It's intended to promote integration of the school system.
It's to, if I might, yes, my answer is yes, and 1601B1, where the purpose, or 1601A and B, where the congressional purpose is set out, in A it is said, the Congress finds that the process of eliminating or preventing minority group isolation and improving the quality of education for all children requires additional funds, and in B, to meet the special needs incident to the elimination of minority group segregation and discrimination among students. So it's corrective and it goes beyond, as we understand it. As we argued yesterday, we believe that we have here just a question of statutory interpretation, and for the reasons that we set forth in our brief, we believe that it makes sense to apply a results test to the second clause of 1605D1B, as well as to the first clause where concededly a results test is required. I would like to conclude my argument by making a reference to the amicus brief. We think this, at the very last part of the amicus brief, it's pointed out that in 1977, I believe it is, under the Educational Amendments Act, this ESSA statute was reenacted. And at the time it was reenacted, the Congress was aware of the regulation that is under attack here, and there was some discussion of the regulation and of its effect, and nonetheless, the statutory language was not changed, which at least would give us some indication that this was not contrary to congressional intent in the first instance.
It wasn't aware of the Second Circuit judgment in this case because that hadn't occurred.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was not aware of that. But it was aware of the regulation. On page 42 of the amicus brief, I believe there's a discussion of it, and there's a reference to Senator Javits, who of course represents the state in which the school district here is involved, and he was aware of this at that time. And so we believe that the Secretary has appropriately interpreted the statutory authority for his regulations, and that the regulations are reasonably calculated to carry out the congressional intent and purpose. And for these reasons and the other reasons set forth in our brief, we respectfully ask that the Court affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit.
Thank you, Mr. Solicitor General. Mr. Bruno, you have about 4 minutes left.
Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I have just three or four points. Is our position that, considering the solicitor's construction of Section 1605D1B, that we look at the congressional history and we look specifically at Senate Report 92-61, which provides us with great insight into what Congress intended? Again, the solicitor, in discussing why, or perhaps why, Congress would have a different standard for demotions and dismissals as opposed to assignment of staff, the solicitor ignores the clear legislative history stated in 92-61 and by Senator Mondale, which I read yesterday, which makes it very clear that this was a particular concern they had about demotions in conjunction with desegregation orders. In response to Justice Stevens' question about waiver, the waiver is irrelevant to this case because we contend we're eligible unless they find intentional discrimination. I will also note that they withhold waiver unfairly. And I will just, the ESA 2 case is the case that is pending on this issue. It's in the Second Circuit, and it's sub judice. We're awaiting decision.
Well, is it not likely that in a situation where the possible violation is in the gray zone, is uncertain, that an adjustment is negotiated and a waiver of any claims of the Secretary are...
Let me tell you how they construe it. We, in the ESA 2 case, which deals with the next year's funding, which we were also helped be ineligible for, the position of HEW is, and we negotiated an agreement with HEW, a memorandum of understanding, which was the subject of the Caulfield case that General McCree indicated, which was upheld. We negotiated that agreement. That is a phased program. It will take several years to implement the changes that HEW would like us to implement, and we have agreed to that. However, they withhold funding to us under the ESA statute, under the waiver, because they contend that a waiver is not available to you until you've eliminated all of the effects. Not that you've reached agreement and you are eliminating them, until you've reached that elimination. So we are now out of ESA funding under their eligibility and under their waiver for several years down the road until we have concluded this agreement, which they have approved with us. Lastly, I would like to just note, the key word is discrimination. In subdivision D, it's the key word. In subdivision B, it's the key word. Both subdivision D, HEW concedes, is an intent test. We argue that it's an intent test in subdivision B. The language around discrimination, we contend, is simply, in one way it's used, engaged in discrimination, another it's in order to avoid participation so as to discriminate. That's clarification language, we believe, of Congress, maybe somewhat inartfully drawn, but the word discrimination had a very definite meaning, and Congress said so during the debate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Industrial Union.